Good afternoon. I'm Chris Kington and Barker, and you're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX. Today we are talking about, this is a program and a production of Action for Healthy Communities and provided in collaboration with KCBX and made possible through underwriting by Joan Geller Sargent. Parkinson's disease is a neurodegenerative brain disorder, and nearly 1 million people will be living with the disease in the United States by 2020, which is reported to be more than the number of people diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, muscular dystrophy, and Lou Gehrig's disease combined. An estimated that 60,000 Americans are diagnosed with Parkinson's disease each year. Currently, more than 10 million people worldwide are living with PD. The disease affects each patient individually and differently, and the symptoms can change from day to day. There is currently no cure. However, there are many treatment options available for patients. My guests for today's show are Marie Allen, a physical therapist specializing in Parkinson's disease on the Central Coast, Barry Cleveland, and Priscilla Mikesell, both board members with the Central Coast Parkinson's Association, and individuals who are living with the disease. And they'll be sharing information about what Parkinson's is, how it has affected their lives, how they're interacting with the disease, and some of the latest information about research and therapies related to Parkinson's. Our show today is live, and if you have comments or questions, I encourage you to join our discussion. We'd love to hear from you. You can do that by calling us at 805-781-3875. Again, that's 805-781-3875. And thank you all for being here today. Really appreciate it.
Happy to be here.
You know, I'm gonna start with you, Maria. As a physical therapist, you've been involved in treatment of Parkinson's for how long?
Well, I've been a therapist for 36 years, and the treatment for Parkinson's and the attitude towards Parkinson's has changed a lot, particularly since they call it the decade of the brain in 2000. That decade, they really were able to do the research and find out how the brain really works and what's really going on, and come up with a whole different way of managing Parkinson's disease, kind of the old stereotype of the shaking palsy or the old man with the tremor is passé. And then, you know, the new there is no stereotype because, you know, as you mentioned, if you've met one person with Parkinson's, you've met one person.
Right?
They're all unique and individual. There are some phenotypes or some kind of classic types of Parkinson's, but there is... It is varies very greatly from person to person and day to day, as you mentioned.
Yeah. Now, that's not to say that shaking isn't a part of Parkinson's for some people.
Right. Tremor is one of the main symptoms. 70% or so of people with Parkinson's will have a tremor, a resting tremor, kind of a pill rolling tremor. Mm-hmm. But not everybody with Parkinson's has a tremor, and not every tremor is Parkinson's. So it is one of the classic symptoms of Parkinson's, and Parkinson's has no test for diagnostic purposes. It's based on clinical symptoms. So tremor is one of those. Bradykinesia, a slow movement. Everybody with Parkinson's has to have some form of slowed movement. You have to have that to be diagnosed with Parkinson's. You may have a tremor, you may not. You have some postural instability, stiffness, postural problems, and gait problems. All those things can be part of Parkinson's, but the only thing that for sure has to be there is that slower movement,
the slower
difficulty.
Movement. Mm-hmm. And Parkinson's, is it affecting a certain age group, or is it kind of across the spectrum of age groups?
The typical age of onset is that later, 58 and older, and there's even an older onset Parkinson's, but then there's young onset or early onset Parkinson's that can start in the 30s or the 40s. Michael J. Fox is one of those famous early onset. And again, as those early onset Parkinson's disease people have a little different trajectory or course of the disease, it looks a little different than the more typical older onset. And then there's other Parkinsonisms or atypical Parkinson's that kind of look like Parkinson's but aren't the typical idiopathic Parkinson's disease. So there's a lot of different things out there which makes it hard to diagnose.
In your experience as a physical therapist working with patients who have been diagnosed with Parkinson's and you're part of their treatment, what do you experience as some of the biggest changes?
Well, the biggest change is that and I love working with people with Parkinson's because exercise and activity can make a huge difference. So there's a very positive impact that we in the healthcare profession that we can have with people with Parkinson's and getting to them early, getting rid of that old don't send them to therapy till they start falling and can't get out of bed, but send people to therapy in the beginning so we can get them started and send them out into the community. And you'll hear Barry and Priscilla talk about some of the wonderful options for Parkinson-specific exercise, and any kind of exercise that you love to do and you can do vigorously is going to help you manage your symptoms. And in theory, and a lot of the research in animals and some in people are showing that it slows the progression.
When you talk about slowness, can you define that a little bit more specifically in terms of what that would look like for somebody maybe who is a little bit younger and then someone who's older? Where
typically, most people kind of notice, and Barry can attest to this, that they don't have as much of an arm swing on one side. That's something that people around you will notice. The person with Parkinson's usually doesn't notice that. They usually have a little reduced sense of self-awareness or sensory perception. So they may not notice that their arm isn't swinging. But people around them, I've had people say their dentist told them, I think you have Parkinson's, because they noticed that symptom, that one side. It usually starts on one side, and over time can the symptoms progress to both sides. But that lack of arm swing, kind of a flat affect or a facial where your face doesn't have as much expression or your voice gets softer, that slowness and smallness affects everything.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times what people see is that one arm doesn't swing or the leg doesn't take as big a step.
And when you're talking about it, it's your gait, right? When you're walking or when you're
When you're walking or moving, it would be noticeable. If you were sitting still, it would be, like the tremor could be picked up earlier.
Yeah. And not all tremors are Parkinson's.
Correct.
Because there are a number of people that do have a tremor that think, oh my gosh, this is Parkinson's, and it is not.
It is not. There is a whole other disease called essential tremor that is not Parkinson's, but it has some of the same, is treated in some of the same ways. But and then you can have tremor related to other things as well, too. But essential tremor is the other main diagnoses that has that tremor, but it's not the typical hand pill rolling tremor that starts off in Parkinson's and usually then progresses. You can have tremor in your arms and your legs. You can have tremor in lots of different places.
So Barry, since she started with you, since Maria started with you, I'm going to go to you. And when did you notice that there were changes? And did you notice or did somebody else notice?
It's a good question. And actually, it was about 6 years ago that my neighbor said, Barry, what's happened with your arm? It doesn't swing when you walk. And I said, well, sure it does. And he goes, no, it doesn't. And he proved me wrong. It didn't swing. And it didn't really bother me. But I mentioned to a physical therapist that I was seeing for a shoulder injury that I had. And he said, oh, yeah, Barry, that's the first sign of Parkinson's disease or an early sign of Parkinson's disease. I go, what? And he said, oh, Barry, don't worry. You don't have Parkinson's disease, because that was really the only symptom that I had. And that was about 6 years ago. And then I started having other symptoms, small things. Sense of smell I was losing. And being in the wine business, that was kind of a bad thing to lose, the sense of smell. I was So
when you're saying your sense of smell was going, was it just less acute, or there were certain smells that weren't coming
It would go
through?
Kind of off and on from zero, no smell, to that I can smell things a little bit. I remember driving out Price Canyon Road, where the oil work is done out there, driving through and not smelling a thing. And then other times, driving through that area and smelling the oil.
Yeah.
And so I knew it was kind of going off and on.
And were you telling yourself initially the wind must be blowing the other way?
No, it's just, we're all getting old. We started losing things. My GP wasn't worried about it. And then I started having somewhat of a arm tremor, but it was really my stiffness in my hand. And I couldn't write very well. I couldn't sign my name. It started getting smaller and smaller. And so went through and went to a couple neurologists, and they weren't quite sure I had Parkinson's. One said I didn't clearly. Then I went to one, and they thought that I had something much worse than Parkinson's, a Parkinson's plus disease called CBD, which stands for big, long...
Cortical basilar degeneration.
That's the one, yeah. And it's a nasty disease. That's You start losing control of your limbs, your breathing, your eating, and you just kind of stop breathing, stop eating, and you die after about 5 years. So I had that diagnosis for a while, about 4 years ago. I'm still here, mm-hmm. And unfortunately that diagnosis was wrong. And when I was diagnosed 4 years ago, it was for Parkinson's, standard old Parkinson's. But it was clinical, like Maria explained. Everybody's is a little different.
Yeah.
And my tremor hadn't come up that much, but now it has. Now I clearly have a tremor. Mm-hmm. Not all the time, but enough where it's certainly noticeable to me and plenty of other people too.
I notice it's on your right hand. Are you right-handed?
Unfortunately, yes.
Okay.
And it's right leg, right hand, right side.
Okay.
And sometimes and I'll have my teeth will chatter, but they only chatter on my right side. Very minor, but it's kind of odd. I put my finger in there in my mouth, and I can feel it on one side, and the other side I don't feel it. So it's a bizarre disease.
And Maria, when Barry is describing this, mm-hmm. Have they been able to identify what's causing this? What in the brain?
So it is a neurodegenerative disease of right. The basal ganglia system in your brain. And it always starts on one side. So mm-hmm. that side, you have less and less of this neurotransmitter called dopamine being produced because the neurons have died. And usually by the time you notice symptoms, 50 to 60% of those neurons have already died. So some of those symptoms, like loss of sense of smell, there's some sleep disorders, some constipation issues that start maybe 20 years before you have any symptoms that are kind of the early prodromal signs. So, but it starts in that system, and they have identified a protein, an alpha-synuclein, that misfolds and clumps up, and the brain can't get rid of it. So your garbage disposal system in your brain doesn't get rid of it, and it creates like a protein infection, and it kind of spreads from cell to cell, and mm-hmm. that's why it progresses and gets worse, because more and more of those cells die. And you don't have enough of that chemical dopamine in your brain, so it's slow. You don't have as much get up and go to move on that side, and it affects. The other thing with that is you have alpha-synuclein in all parts of your body, in your gut, in your nasal passages, it affects every part. So there's motor symptoms and then that people see, and then there's all the non-motor symptoms that people don't see.
Right.
Now, the alpha-synuclein, though, correct me if I'm wrong, everybody has some in them.
Mm-hmm.
And Parkinson's patients seem to have two or three times more and concentrates and it misfolds. So they're doing a lot of research in this area to find out why that is and how to stop it or change it.
So a lot of the research is geared at, can we find a cure? Can we find
right.
Can we get
a
vaccination right. to stop this from happening? Is it starting in the gut or right. the nasal passages and then traveling to the brain? There's a lot of talk of those kinds of theories. Mm-hmm. But because they at this point have no biomarker or no test that they can do that identifies, says, yes, you have Parkinson's. They can do a fancy DAT scan and see that you don't have a lot of dopamine on one side of your brain and say, yes, that's indicative of Parkinson's.
That's
consistent with Parkinson's. But it doesn't say that, yes, what's caught, because a lot of other things could cause that problem in your brain. So,
now, one of the early pharmacological interventions was dopamine.
Right. Carbidopa, levodopa, or Sinemet. It's been around, I think it's 60 years now and it's still pretty much the gold standard. So it's a replacement therapy. So if your brain isn't making enough dopamine, you're not able to, you add some in to allow your brain to function more normally. And as the disease progresses, you need to add a little more and more and more, because at this point, we can't stop the disease from progressing.
Isn't that incredible when you think about it? Here's this disease that's been around thousands of years, hundreds certainly, that's been known.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 6 years ago we have a solution, and we're still taking the same stuff.
Yeah.
And also having some side effects with it as well.
Serious side effects.
What kind of serious side effects?
gastrointestinal stuff with your stomach that is not
from the dopamine.
So it can cause, you know, everybody is different. Some people have trouble, some people have no trouble. Right. They do put it together with another medication that helps with the nausea, a component, or that gastrointestinal mm-hmm. component. It's important, you know, you take it right as far as food and those things go. But for most people, it's a very benign drug. It's a natural drug. It's not a big synthetic drug.
So it's like replacing a drug that's naturally in your body, just too low.
Right, but that you don't have enough of. But if there, and a lot of people, and I caution very on this, because if you have a lot of problems moving and you're slow and stiff, you don't have enough dopamine in your brain, you probably need a slow dose of medication to help you move, because if you stop moving, not moving is protodegenerative. You'll get worse faster. Your disease will progress more. So the whole goal is to be able to have a good quality of life and keep as active and as possible, as vigorously active as mm-hmm. possible. So if you're afraid of taking medication because one of the side effects long term is this dyskinetic movement, then you're actually, that's
describe what dyskinetic movement is.
It's kind of looks like a writhing movement. It's
I don't have it because I'm not taking any of the dopamine replacement at this point. But if you see Michael J. Fox, he's an easy example. He's moving at his waist.
Yeah.
It
kind of jerks.
Jerks and moves around. And that mm-hmm. is not a symptom of Parkinson's. That's
no,
a side effect from the medication.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The medication only works so long for different lengths of time for different people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, it's.
And there's time release, and some people have problems with the time release.
There are different,
I know somebody right now that's on that, and they're having a very difficult time with it.
There are different formulations of it.
So they're going back to the older version. Mm-hmm. And to tell you the truth, I didn't have problems for quite a while. Mm-hmm. I was diagnosed at the end of 2017, and until probably the last 6 months, my stomach, I've not had stomach problems for my whole life. And part of what goes on, and I don't know if this is the Sinemet, but if I wake up during the night and I have a drink of water, it makes my stomach hurt. It burns in the middle of the night. And before I eat or after I eat, I can have discomfort too. I don't so much mind that, but it just, when you have that kind of discomfort and it goes on a regular basis, like when you eat, you're concerned about eating too much. Because then if you don't eat much and then you get hungry later, you'll want to eat more, and then you'll cause it to have that.
So you really
kind of
have
burning.
To find what your normal balance is in terms of your own routine.
And again, some of those
mm-hmm.
things like
the
intestinal issues mm-hmm. and those kinds of issues are actually a bigger problem mm-hmm. than some of the movement problems that
yeah.
are more obvious.
And you were saying that the intestinal stuff actually starts long before they think.
Yeah, it is a prodromal, so up to 20 years ahead of time.
Wow.
Most people will report they've had chronic constipation problems.
So it may be.
That's slowed. So think of this slowed movement.
Yeah.
Everything slows down. Your digestive process slows down. So
Constipation
is a natural occurring.
And was that something that you guys noticed, or you just thought that
I
was normal?
Until now, but
I have.
Yeah, and Barry was
late.
Very active
yeah.
before. He's always been active.
Yeah.
So he's, you know, we kind of a great habitual exerciser before he was ever diagnosed with Parkinson's.
That's another disease.
He's a poster child a bit for that idea that exercise and then, you know, the habitual exercisers, people that exercise 3 or more days a week, have a better prognosis or a slower progression than people that don't exercise.
Or more sedentary.
Yeah, that's a
I'm Chris Kington Barker, and you're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX HD1 San Luis Obispo, KNBX HD1 San Ardo, and KSBX Santa Barbara. In addition to movement-related symptoms, Parkinson's symptoms can be unrelated to movement. People with Parkinson's disease often are more impacted by their non-motor symptoms than motor symptoms. Examples of non-motor symptoms include apathy, depression, constipation, sleep behavior disorders, loss of sense of smell, and cognitive impairment. My guests for today's show are here to talk about a disease that has an estimated 60,000 Americans diagnosed each year, and more than 10 million people around the world are living with it. There currently is no cure, but there are many ways for individuals who are affected to live long and engaged lives. And my guests for today's topic are Maria Allen, a physical therapist specializing in Parkinson's disease here on the Central Coast, Barry Cleveland, and Priscilla Mikesell. Both are board members with the Central Coast Parkinson's Association and individuals who are living with the disease. We welcome you to join our discussion for today's show, and you can bring your questions or comments into our conversation. You can do that by calling us at 805-781-3875. Again, that's 805-781-3875. And Barry, I want to go back to you, because you were talking about how this kind of started for you. You noticed some of the changes. The shoulder that you hurt, was it on the same side?
It
that
was.
You had the nose, the lack of swing?
Yes.
So you're thinking like, yeah, my shoulder hurts, I'm not swinging it.
It was the shoulder stopped swinging before I crushed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it was, in a sense, unrelated.
Yeah.
But it still hurts now. The shoulder hurts. And that's the side that wiggles and waggles.
So being such a athletic person and physical person, was there that, you know, I mentioned depression. Was there that letdown as well of, oh, criminy, you know?
Yeah. You know, the depression you get with Parkinson's is not that I feel sorry for myself,
no,
because I've lost the ability to do different things. It's it's a chemical mood.
Yeah.
And they've got great drugs for depression, as everybody should know if they have any depression.
Yeah,
so,
and most Americans do know that.
It's not prescribed. And it works. And I've been on those medicines, and I have no issues on that now.
But exercise and being active, mm-hmm, is also an effective way to manage,
absolutely,
some of those symptoms of depression.
And dopamine.
And it increases the dopamine.
Going.
It does, and it makes your brain work better. There's a lot of research on exercise for not just Parkinson's, but almost any diagnosis, of how aerobic exercise or, you know, more vigorous exercise, mm-hmm, improves how your brain functions. It improves, not necessarily doesn't make you make more dopamine. It can't do that, but it makes your brain work better. You use the dopamine you have better. It shunts things to other receptors. It does, you know, amazing things for mood. The one thing in Parkinson's that I don't see with these two, but a lot is probably underreported, is the apathy, which is that sense of, I don't want to do anything, that goes along with your brain telling you to move slow and move small. Mm-hmm. So people, even when they're diagnosed, are already moving, they say, about 20% less. They're less active than their age-matched peers. Mm-hmm. So then you have your brain just saying, hey, no initiation, no motivation, no, you know, that's the dopamine
and
component.
We still, I mean, I'm looking at Priscilla over here across the way. I mean, even though we show up to things, we have, I'll speak for myself, I won't speak for you, Priscilla, but there's plenty of apathy. Sometimes you wake up and just don't feel like doing what's on the schedule that day. Force ourselves to these exercise classes and such, and then never regret going.
Mm-hmm.
But it's,
and it's
still
like,
takes
could
the
I
work.
Just take the day off?
Yeah. Probably once in a while, we do.
Yeah.
And I did it yesterday. I felt a little guilty, but I totally enjoyed myself out in the garden. And it was like, this is different. But when you've had more energy and are committed to different things, it's hard when that comes up.
Yeah.
Mary, you were a runner?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So,
pretty much so.
Do you still engage in running?
I do not.
Okay.
Only if someone's chasing me, but that's not too often lately.
Yeah. Because I would think that would be risky.
Well, before I was diagnosed, I realized that my running was not as smooth as it used to be.
Sure.
And it wasn't as enjoyable because it wasn't as fluid.
Right.
I had to start thinking about lifting my feet up, especially my right leg up, to take a step and take a run. And so it was much more difficult. And I realized that after I was diagnosed that that's what this was, this was Parkinson's slowing down that right leg of mine. And I couldn't just mindlessly run down the street. I had to be real conscious about it, which kind of takes a lot of the fun out of it.
Yeah.
Plus, it's dangerous. Because if you don't get that foot up, you can trip very easily.
Sure,
and if you're going 3, 5, 7 miles an hour, you're going to fall. And that's what happens to lots of people with Parkinson's. Fortunately, knock on wood, that hasn't happened to me yet. But it's probably in my future, and I realize that.
Well, not a long ways down the future. But as a physical therapist, I would say I would love to work with you on being able to get back to running. And treadmill training is one of the great things in Parkinson's. They do a lot of research on bicycle, especially putting a person, this is the fun part, with Parkinson's on the back of a tandem cycle and a pro cyclist on the front. But treadmill training and really working on, that would be a great goal to work
on
with a therapist.
My schedule is full, Maria.
I know. So is mine.
Yes, I don't think you have any time.
One of the things that I was reading about Parkinson's too, that it would be helpful, Maria, if you could define a little bit, is the stiffness. Because it's a different kind of stiffness. There's the stiffness as we get older or we've over-exercised that you get up and you have the stiffness and it's like, oh, goodness, or there. But this is a different kind of stiffness.
Definitely stiffness in the trunk, stiffness in your hands. It's that slowness and smallness of movement. So even if you don't use intention to think, to open your fingers all the way, you if you say open your hand, it's only going to go so far. Mm-hmm. Straighten your arm, it doesn't quite go straight unless you actually really think. So the muscles on mostly on the front side of your body and all the flexion pattern, because that posture becomes that flex posture over time, get tight. And the extensors are not activated very much, and they get weaker over because of disuse. But strength is not the big problem. It's that slow, small movement into that flexed posture that you have to counteract with extensions.
So. Well, let's quickly take a call here from Faith. Hi, Faith. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi. Did you have a comment or question?
Yeah, I did. It's been very useful for me. What a specialist told my brother in South Africa. He had Parkinson's. I have no idea which sort it was. But the specialist said, you have a stony face, or some Parkinson's patients have a stony face.
Yeah.
And people around them think that they're in a bad mood or they're not with them, all sorts of things. And he said, but when you speak, the emotion causes your face to react. And I found that very useful to know that, because when I see people now, I think, oh, maybe you've got Parkinson's. Maybe you're not in a bad mood, you know. But so far, I'm so good. My one brother had Lou Gehrig's, and my brother John had Parkinson's. I walk with two sticks, but I make sure I'm exercising. Hopefully, I'm okay. But I did find that so useful, and John and I did. Because he would see himself in the mirror and think, oh, God, look at me. But as soon as he spoke, the emotion showed. So I find that useful for people to know.
Thank you for pointing that out, Faith. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you, Faith. My girlfriend has a name for it. She goes, Barry, you're looking very serious. And I know what that means. You don't consciously do it. Your face just doesn't, the muscles don't put you in a nice big grin.
Yeah. It's called masking?
A masked face.
Mask face.
And it's a very, very common, and it is a part of, there's a stigma attached to having Parkinson's, and some people feel it more than others, but people think somebody's not enjoying something or not having a good time, or they're not happy because of the inability to, they don't have as animated of a facial expression. So doing things, joining a singing group or acting or performing or doing exercises and the voice gets softer, the face doesn't show expression. Mm-hmm. So you again, using that intentional strategy of speaking, as she said, and showing, with more effort and more vigor, brings out more expression and helps combat.
Right.
That.
And I love the idea of it makes you smaller. You become smaller of trying to become bigger.
Wonderful thing is that in our exercise class, Rock Steady Boxing, that is something that we do when we're counting exercises, mm-hmm. we speak loudly and we open our bodies and put our arms mm-hmm. back and really emphasize the fingers being completely open. And it gives you kind of a triumphant feeling. Mm-hmm. It sort of combats the way that you have been feeling. And I hadn't really mentioned it to anybody, but in class, oftentimes on my way there, you folks on one of the programs had the Soweto Gospel Choir come, and they came and performed here. And I got some of their music. So on my way to class, I will play Alleluia.
Oh, I love
and
that.
I'm singing with them just as loud as I possibly can. And it's sort of like I've been coached on the way there. And it just makes me more open to everything and realize that there are ways to deal with this. And I think, too, for me, and I'm just segueing right into everything else, I was diagnosed in 2017 at the end of the year. And I went to one Parkinson's support group, and Dave Sanchez, our teacher, happened to be there. January 5th, I started his classes, and it
his
was
classes
a,
in Rock Steady,
in
which
Rock
is
Steady
boxing.
Non-contact
so both
boxing.
Of you are non-contact boxers. Did
right.
you ever think you would be a boxer?
No,
not.
I enjoyed actually watching like Cassius Clay, Muhammad Ali years ago, but you really get a feel for it, and it does something wonderful.
And you get a feel for how hard boxing is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's so much to it.
3-4 minutes of constant punching a bag is so difficult.
So why does that
work? Why does it work?
It
meets the criteria of being high intensity.
Mm-hmm.
It includes a lot of rotational components and stretching and vigorous exercise.
And you engage your brain.
It's cognitive, so you have to, you know. And then there's a lot of problems with initiating movement and stopping movement and set. They call it set switching in your brain, switching from one thing to the next. That's some of the cognitive executive function problems. And in boxing, you're going this direction, that direction. You're moving. You're constantly having to do that, practice that. And it's in an environment that's very encouraging and supportive, which is very important with people with Parkinson's. Imagine, you know, you're having a hard time doing things on your own because your brain says don't move, move small. So you go somewhere and it's you're getting great feedback. You're getting you're coaching somebody else. You're helping each other. You're doing things in a really positive, uplifting manner, which is probably one of the most important components.
Yeah. Where do you guys go to box? Where is Rock Steady?
It's here in San Luis Obispo on South Higuera. What is it? 3536 Higuera.
So there's a there's a Rock Steady Boxing in Atascadero.
Okay.
Downtown Atascadero. There's a Rock Steady Boxing here in San Luis. There's a neuroboxing program in Santa Maria. So we have pretty good coverage here in the on the coast. There's a dance class, PD Moves class. Dance for PD is a great program that's offered once a week here in San Luis. There's some other exercise classes based on other, you know, movement things, power moves, and we were starting up a hiking group, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, it isn't the boxing in and of itself. It's the type of exercise.
Yeah.
The vigorous type of exercise and the camaraderie and the consistency that are, you know, it's 3 days a week and minimum exercise is 3 days a week.
There's a community there.
There really
is. We push
is.
Each other and we have a great time. We have a ball actually. But it's hard. It's hard for any workout, let alone us being in our 60s plus age group doing a workout.
Yeah.
Plus we have Parkinson's disease.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But yep.
We really encourage each other.
Hard.
We do. Mm-hmm. And the beautiful thing is, too, that I think when you're in community and you're working on something together, number one, for me, I get to see people maybe that have a greater progression of it than I do.
Mm-hmm.
And if I help them, it makes me feel good. It makes them feel good.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a chemistry that goes on there. And then every time somebody has been struggling to do something and they succeed at it, it makes you really happy for them and you get to watch them. And I feel enormous gratitude of being around this. And quite honestly, I am in better shape than I was 20 years ago, because it is kick-ass. It's serious, and you don't want to back off, mostly because you'll get teased a little bit, but also because you're...
Little peer pressure there.
Little peer pressure, but it just, it makes you feel good, and some power that you felt like you may have lost, you regain again. Yeah. And I know that then when I'm at home, I also try to remember to not push myself too much so that I'm good for class, but I don't do stupid things because our teachers also encourage us that, say, like when I do push-ups, I don't do them on the floor. I do them against the wall. He modifies things depending upon a person's condition.
Right.
Or if he sees me like punching a punching bag and getting carried away a little bit, he'll say, you know, just back off, because they don't want you to be hurt.
Right.
They want you to push yourself.
Yeah.
And like I say, that interaction between us, and we look forward to seeing each other. Mm-hmm. It's really, it's
so
lovely.
That's important. And it's important to find something that you love doing and in be in an environment that's important. And there's some great studies on tango and dancing and, you know, that show that if you, even if you just go to a community dance class 2 or 3 days a week, your quality of life is going to improve and stay better, and those people tend to stay in that class. So, you know, it's finding what exercise works for you and is fun. Fun is a big part of it. It has to be enjoyable.
I think one of the things I had noticed too with Parkinson's is that my balance has changed, and where I would have kind of moved to one side and maybe leaned against something, I don't do that because I know potentially I could fall. And if you think about, say, you're doing exercises from side to side and to the back, and normally you would fall forward, it's changing the neuroplasticity of your brain. I don't know how to scientifically describe what neuroplasticity is, but I just know that there's some changes that have gone on and have made me mindful in a way that I wouldn't have been before.
Aren't some of these exercises too, Maria, for instance, the rock boxing, isn't that also working on core work?
Oh, yes. Definitely.
So balance.
Yeah,
push,
so the balance, balance really is
a part of it.
It's a big
helping
part of it.
Helping a lot with this.
And balance is more than just your actual balance. It's your confidence in your balance.
Yes.
So,
and the awareness L-dopa in your brain, too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And awareness. Posture instability is a problem.
If I can add, you know, we were talking about exercise, which is, I think, all obviously in agreement that this is something good for us. And, you know, if you don't have Parkinson's disease, obviously exercise is good. What I try to do is three different basic kind of treatments for myself. One is certainly exercise, which I probably spend the most time at. But the other side of that is the yoga, the mindfulness, which you just brought up.
Right.
That goes on. So I try to do yoga once or twice a week, and also something called Qigong. Which I'm doing. I'm going to do some this afternoon, actually, which is kind of a Tai Chi movement, but it's a mentally focused action on movement, and it's really wonderful for my brain and for my soul, I'll even say. And so I have that part of it. I have the exercise part of it, and then also I have a social aspect of it, of my own treatment. And that's just meeting people for breakfast, being in different groups. I'm in a book group, and making sure I have that social interaction, because that is a nutritional piece that isn't always thought of, which is very important for
feeding your
everybody.
Soul. Yeah.
Feeding our souls.
Yeah.
And especially with Parkinson's patients.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to talk more about that in just a sec, too. I'm Chris Kington Barker, and I'm here with you on Central Coast Voices on KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio. If you just joined us and you want to hear earlier portions of this show, it will be recorded, and our shows are archived on our KCBX website at kcbx.org on demand, and you can listen to them at your convenience anytime. Depression and anxiety affect up to 50% of people living with Parkinson's disease. Mood changes can bring on worsening function, leading to decreased quality of life. However, it is totally treatable. Tending to one's emotional health helps keep the cycle at bay. My guests for today's show are here to talk about how they're coping with their Parkinson's disease and how the treatment for Parkinson's disease has changed from the perspective of individuals who were looking at treatment 30 or 40 years ago and how it's affected them personally. My guests today are Maria Allen, physical therapist specializing in Parkinson's disease here on the Central Coast, Barry Cleveland, and Priscilla Mikesell, board members on Central Coast Voices or Central Coast Parkinson's Association. They are board members with that and individuals living with Parkinson's disease. Our show is live, and we have about 20 minutes left in today's show and time for calls. We'd love to hear from you. You can still participate in our discussion by calling us at 781-3875. That's 781-3875. You know, Barry, you were talking about feeding your soul and being out in the community. And when you talked, Maria, about how Parkinson's kind of the thing that you fight is being small. Being small is kind of being driven away or hiding away mm-hmm. from that social thing, especially if you do have tremors or if you do have some kind of a facial masking or if you do have a swing that isn't working or something visible. We're not good in society about showing that. And, you know, certainly we're not even good about showing age, you know, let alone any kind of debility. So talk a little bit about how your social network is about having you bring that to them and how they're responding to it and how they're looking at their own lives and their own aging as a result.
Well, what I would like to make mention of is the fact that to be out there in the world, there are times like maybe you have a phone conversation or something that you don't want to make because it might be uncomfortable. And I find that with Parkinson's, the times that I do have that feeling of being small,
yeah,
and it's like maybe I just won't be noticed and I just deal with this, I consciously make myself, and recently I had to take care of a matter with somebody, get out there and do it. And encourage myself to do it. And then I see how much better I feel. Mm-hmm. I do a good deal of spending time with people, largely in 12-step groups and other places and spiritual groups I'm involved with. And I've just come to have so much more gratitude for that. Mm-hmm. And also, one of the things that works for anybody, whether they have Parkinson's or not, is when I can feel gratitude for the good things that I do have in my life, I can't simultaneously be feeling fear and feeling gratitude at the same time. So mm-hmm. even though it may take an effort to do that, I mean, sometimes I remember like looking at an African violet and thinking about how beautiful the color purple in it was, because at the time I felt like, I don't have a good boyfriend right now, and I don't like my job, and I don't like this. What should I be grateful for? And it's made me ever since then, when I would look at an African violet, just sort of snap out of that and yeah. shift into something new.
Yeah.
I will tell you, in a way, from also having found Rocksteady Boxing and turning around the notion of, oh, I've got Parkinson's, whatever stigma about a tremor or yeah. whatever, because I thought I was above that. And then I watched myself sort of like, okay, I'm going to cover it up, put my hand on top of my hand so yeah. it doesn't shake. And I've just let that go. And I've got to tell you one little cute story. 2 days ago, I was in my backyard working in my garden, and I hear from different people about how people have hallucinations with Parkinson's, and I see this little mouse dash across the yard, and I'm thinking, is it a hallucination, or is it for real? It's like, I'm calling my cat, would you go check that out for me? And just sort of being able to chuckle, and when I've heard people say something like, with martinis, is it shaken or stirred? You know, having to do with if you had Parkinson's, it would be shaken rather than stirred. But I feel like, too, there are so many things that are available. And in this county, if you think about the large concentration of us that are seniors, that are baby boomers.
We have a larger population here than the California average,
this
correct?
This is coming up. Yeah. And I know that also I live up in Cambria and a concentration of retired people there. But we also are a part of kind of a seniors island that is very much into exercise. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And probably if you lived in the dead of winter where it's freezing cold, you're not going to be doing it quite as much.
Right.
But the very fact that we look upon that in a healthful way and that we try to do things that we're being mindful about, I think that we want the quality of our lives to be well. And we have that opportunity here.
Yeah.
As a side, as you were saying, we do live in an area where we have a lot of seniors, and the population or the number of people with Parkinson's has doubled in the last 15 years and is expected to double in the next 15. So it's considered a bit of a pandemic, and whether it's because people are living longer or they're diagnosing it better, there's a lot of... they don't know why, but it's expected to double again in the next 15 years.
I was going to ask you about that because it does seem like there's an increasing incidence. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, could it be environmental?
Well, they do think that there is an environmental cause, that part of that, you know, what goes on is there's some kind of genetic predisposition and some kind of environmental exposure, which means doesn't mean that if you're exposed to something, you're going to get Parkinson's. It's a combination of different things that then later on in life seems to be triggered by, you know, something else. So they don't know what causes it, and they don't know the exact mechanism of how it starts. And that's where a lot of the research is now. But it is becoming, you know, and we live in an area where there are a lot of people with Parkinson's. And so that's part of the, you know, over the last, I'd say, 5 years, we've had a big increase in what's available for people with Parkinson's. So several years ago, I'd have people come to see me as a physical therapist from the Valley or different places because they couldn't find a Parkinson's specialized therapist. Well, now we have Parkinson's specialized therapists in outpatient and home health. We have exercise specialists in boxing and dance and power moves. And so there's a lot of more things available for people to, find things to do. And then there's the support group. So I'm kind of the board advisor. I am the board advisor for the Parkinson Association. And we're really trying to get with a kind of a new way of doing things and getting people together for education, for events, getting, support groups don't have to be you sit in a room and listen to someone talk. It can be going to an exercise class. It can be going for a hike. A couple of weeks ago, they went for a hike on the Bob Jones Trail with some Nordic poles and sat and had a little refreshment and walked back. And they had a lovely time.
And they're going to get together again.
And so that is going to, turn into hopefully a monthly event. And hopefully we'll get, something, even if it's a low key, let's go to have a cup of coffee or go to happy hour. It's just to get people together because that socialization is a huge part of managing your Parkinson's.
That segues a little bit into what's happening on September 7th.
It does.
What's happening September 7th?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked, Chris.
Thank you.
last year, we started something of the Central Coast Parkinson's Association called Parkinson's in the Plaza, and this was where we brought together providers of resources for people with Parkinson's disease. And this year, we're doing it at Parkinson's in the Park at Santa Rosa Park on September 7th at 10 to 1 p.m., we've brought in how many vendors?
We've got 7 or 8 sponsors. So those will be some of the drug companies and DBS companies that help manage some of those symptoms, so that then you can go see all the exhibitors from physical therapy and speech therapy and dance and boxing and
that's great.
All of those kinds of things. And we have a stage, we'll have some demonstrations and performances people can join in on.
We'll have door prizes, a free
food
raffle,
available,
food and things to drink.
It's going to be a Parkinson's party.
Parkinson's party.
It was really fun last year.
We
all had a really good
time.
Well,
and it sounds like it's really informational, too. And if people, and I'm assuming for our family, too, and I want to get back to talking about, what kind of support is available for family, because it's got an impact on family, too, how to.
Yeah,
there are changes.
It affects everybody.
Yeah.
It is not just.
We were really blessed, too. Back in May, we were able to bring 3 doctors from UCLA that did a presentation called How to Shake the Shakes.
Uh-huh. I saw that.
And
yeah.
Just a wealth of info, and 160 people showed up.
That's
for that.
Fantastic.
So we're really hopeful, because I believe we had about 100 for this last year, and we're hoping to do the same this year. It's not what things sometimes wind up being, where people would maybe get together once a month and have coffee together and, excuse me, bitch about having the disease. We need to bring this information in, and it needs to be brought in a way that's entertaining, but also really gives people answers.
Yeah, and informational and engaging.
And empowering is the word I like to use.
Well, and I love that Priscilla was using the word of empowerment, mm-hmm. too. Let's take a call from Hyla. And Hyla, thank you for being so patient.
No, it was worth it. And I had a quick statement. A very good family friend of ours had Parkinson's, and he had the head moving and our shoulders and stuff. And he wanted to drive in Hawaii with us up to the north point of the Big Island, which is up on cliffs and this and that. And I was scared of out of my mind, but when he got in the car, he stopped shaking and he concentrated and drove. And I wondered if that happens sometimes with Parkinson's patients. And then my other question was, how did it get its name, this disease? And who was the person or persons that obviously knew it and named it?
Okay. Well,
good questions, Hyla. Thank you for good questions, and thank you for being so patient to ask those.
Oh, no problem.
So as far as the driving goes, the tremor is a resting tremor. Mm-hmm. In traditional, typical Parkinson's. So it occurs when you're not using your arm or not using your muscle, and you can turn that tremor off a lot of times by activating your hand or opening your fingers or pressing it down or doing active movement. That's a resting tremor, mm-hmm. which is different than an intention tremor, where you see somebody whose hands are resting and they're quiet, but as soon as they go to reach, the tremor starts up. That's an intention tremor. So there are different kinds of tremors.
Uh-huh.
And
well,
so
I've seen people that can concentrate in the car, you know, where they were kind of flailing around and not with Parkinson's, but, you know.
So he was using a lot of intention and accessing the part of his brain that is not the habitual automatic part, but the very cognitive part. And that is a strategy you can use. So that's kind of why that worked. And I'm trying to think of James Parkinson. Does anybody remember the story of the founder or the person who it was named after?
He first described it in an essay called The Shaking Palsy. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't named Parkinson's until well after he had passed away.
Uh-huh.
And I want to throw the dates out of late
1816, 1817. He was an English surgeon. He first described the shaking palsy. Paralysis agitans is the name of the actual name of that you would call it. And Parkinson's disease is the more common name.
How did you say that?
Paralysis agitans.
Like agitated.
Agitated. But that is the history, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Good questions, Hyla.
A long ways ago. Yeah.
Great.
Thank you for calling.
No problem. Thank you for being there and discussing such an important situation.
You're most welcome.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
So when we're talking about family, how have your families coped with this, and what kinds of things have they had to do differently in order to kind of be inclusive of this disease?
For myself, they haven't had to do anything because my symptoms are relatively mild. They probably have to put up with me shaking a little bit in front of them, but mm-hmm. I think that's not too horrendous for them. So it has been nothing much needed,
okay.
I would say. Maybe putting up with me taking an afternoon nap once in a while, which I don't think is all that tough. I mean, because I have a stage mm-hmm. one Parkinson's. If I had higher stages, I'd answer that question differently. Mm-hmm.
Do you fatigue more easily?
Clearly, yes.
Yeah.
They had a lot good
Same
discussion
here.
About their naps. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. However, you know, last week I rode 35 miles in a bike rally up in Sonoma County. So it's not like I'm sitting around napping all day long.
No, not like that at all. Yeah.
That was a Michael J. Fox Tour de Fox fundraising ride. That was done up in Sonoma, and it's done in a number of places around the country. and we raised about $750,000.
That's fantastic. Good. I'm impressed. I'm impressed at 35 miles.
Yes. Well, they call it the short ride because they have a long ride at 55, and then they have a super ride at 77.
Oh, my goodness.
And they have a sprint at 10.
Oh, my goodness.
So they still call it 35 miles short. And we've all of us doing it, hundreds of us did it, are complaining that we're not going to call it the short ride anymore.
Do you find that symptoms can be exacerbated if you're really fatigued or if you're anxious, or does that
if
have
I'm
any impact?
If I'm listening to the news while I'm driving, not a good combination.
If I listen to the news while I'm driving, it's not a good combination
for
either
anything.
For a number of reasons.
I find, too, that I need to, as much as I can, deal with my sleep, and that can be difficult. And there's an old adage in AA, halt, hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. And if you're experiencing any of those, how they affect your mood and what you're doing anyway. And I definitely find that to be the case with the Parkinson's.
So really attending to your sleep is part of your regimen.
Sleep hygiene is the term they use now. But sleep is extremely
really
important for your brain. And at night when you're asleep is when your brain gets rid of all the toxic proteins and cleans it all out. And if you're not getting enough sleep, then your brain isn't refreshing itself at night and creating more problems.
It needs that time.
Sleep is more important than we give it credit for. And an area that oftentimes is disrupted in people with Parkinson's, so it leads to more problems.
We have just a couple of minutes, so I want to mention that Saturday, September 7th, Parkinson's in the Park at Santa Rosa Park in San Luis Obispo, and it's Living Well with Parkinson's Disease. Lots of information about Parkinson's and lots of information about treatment of Parkinson's, how people who have Parkinson's can re-engage to be bigger and not allow Parkinson's to keep them small. Mm-hmm. Any last comments that you want to make sure that we get out there today for people?
I was going to mention, and I know it's late in the program to bring this all up, but I was able to go to Kyoto, Japan earlier this summer for the World's Parkinson's Congress as a delegate, which is about 3,500 people who showed up, doctors, clinicians, researchers, and Parkinson's sufferers got together there. And I was very optimistic about a lot of the research that's being done, that's done with the opportunities in stem cells research and how that's being successful working on animals by creating brain stems, making out of stem cells, making new cells that produce dopamine and actually inserting it into mice, the brains of mice, and that they've actually turned around their Parkinson's. And, and they're producing dopamine in those cells again. So there's hope out there, and I hope it happens soon as we get much better therapies and that big C word, that cure.
Yep.
Can I make one quick comment?
Quick.
Okay. The other thing is that whenever anyone gets a chance that has any questions about this, myccpa.org is the local Central Coast Parkinson's Association, and we have information about the Michael J. Fox Foundation, all of these events, and where you can get help.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. I want to thank my guests for today's show, Maria Allen, physical therapist specializing in Parkinson's disease, Barry Cleveland and Priscilla Mikesell, board members for the Central Coast Parkinson's Association. Next week, please join host Fred Monroe, and he's going to be doing a Labor Day show looking at the child care crisis in our community and talking with Tonya Iverson, director for ASI Children's Center at Cal Poly, Molly Kern, director of governmental affairs with SLO Chamber of Commerce, and Wendy Wendt, executive director for First Five San Luis Obispo. Central Coast Voices has been sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities and the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation in collaboration with KCBX, and made possible by Joan Geller Sargent. I'm Chris Kington Barker. Thank you for joining us today's show.